Welcome back to the Own Your Awkward podcast. I'm your host, Andy Vargo, and every episode we get into what has made our guests vulnerable and how they've learned how to own their awkward in order to live their best life. Stay tuned so you can hear every awkward moment in today's show. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Own Your Awkward. I'm Andy Vargo, and I'm super excited to have Jack Lepiarz here. He is a circus performer, a radio anchor, and you may know him and have seen him on America's Got Talent as Jacques Zouafer, if I said that right.
You got it right. You can just say Jack the Whipper. That's all fine. I mean, that was how I was on America's Got Talent, because we realized that me drawing on a fake mustache and speaking in a French accent was probably not the way to go on national TV, especially on a show called America's Got Talent. But sure. When I'm performing Renaissance fairs, that is my character. Jacques Zouafer, he is French, he is sassy, he honks his horn, he whips the dangerous animals. He is here to protect us.
I love that. Well, Jack, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure.
So I like to start out finding out what everyone sees in the world that is positive right now, because I feel like there's so much talk that's negative that's easy to go to, and I want to change that conversation. So what's the most positive thing you see right now, Jack?
The positive, here's what's been weird for me as in terms of positive. So I got on TikTok about a year ago, 10 months ago, and since then, it's just absolutely blown up across like all social media platforms. And what's been really, really surprising to me and pleasantly surprising is how nice people on the internet have generally been, which is, I feel like we hear about, like, you know, everyone on the internet is terrible, it's going to be awful, don't ever go there. Like, I will post things and like, I will look at the video and be like, this is bad, this is cringe, why am I posting this? And then like, it'll get a million views and like 90% of the comments are positive. And I'm like, what this isn't how it's supposed to work. And so that has been, I think, the most positive thing that I have seen in my personal, I think, experience over the last few weeks.
I love that. That is the last thing that I have heard anybody say positive about the internet.
So no one ever says anything positive about the internet.
Right. Well, and I think that it forces us, when we don't say positive and we don't see the positive, then it forces us to go look for those negative comments. When, like you said, 90% could be good.
Yeah, I mean, and like the negative comments still occasionally will get me. What's been interesting, I've noticed, is the negative comments don't show up on any of my circus stuff. They don't show up on most of my videos. The places where they've shown up the most was the first time I posted a baseball or like slow pitch softball video.
Oh,
and
really?
So many people were like, this guy's swing sucks. I'm like, well, obviously, I'm playing amateur baseball, and
right.
You know, if my swing was better, I'd be playing for the Red Sox right now.
Yeah, this is not, check out my whip, not my bat, right?
Yeah.
That is awesome. Yeah, I find that I had someone make a negative comment on an episode a couple weeks ago, and they're like, oh, this guy is filth. And they were replying to the person that was on my podcast. And the ironic thing is, the person's awkward was that he struggles with not always needing to be liked. And I thought, well, you're kind of proving our point here. But like you said, you put these things out there and you record these videos, and our perception is we see every little mistake we make, but the rest of the world sees this talent that they don't have, that you have.
Yeah, I mean, there's an angle to that. I mean, it might be that I grew up in the circus and like I see talents and it takes a lot for me to be impressed a lot of the time. Or it's like, you know, a lot of the time I'm looking at things being, anytime I see a circus show, I'm thinking of like, okay, how would I approach this? What would I have done differently? What do I like here? What do I not like? So, I mean, I think in general, I'm a pretty negative person. I keep those thoughts to myself though. I'm not the guy on Reddit posting cringe. And when I do think things are impressive and when I do appreciate things, I try to be very vocal, because I do feel like there's not enough positivity out there. And so when I have something positive to say, I want to share that.
That's good. Yeah. And I feel like when you type out cringe, you know, you're taking the time to type all those letters and whatever else you're adding, like, why bother? Like, why don't you take the time to say, Hey, this like, other thing is awesome.
That's the other thing. Like, also when we get negative comments, I'm like, well, an extra comment adds to the algorithm and gets me more views. All right. It's still a comment.
Exactly. Like, thank you for taking the time to boost my video a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. A woman commented on that where she posted a bunch of, I think she's like an original YouTube star. I forget her name off the top of my head, but she, I guess, has really dark circles under her eyes and frequently does not wear makeup to cover those up. And people have commented on her dark circles. And so she made a video about it, like people posting comments about my dark circles, those same people boosting all of my videos into virality.
Right. Yeah. It's like you're helping one way or the other, whether you like it or not. So
Yeah. And it's like, as long as you're not too self-conscious, I mean, you can get into a spiral if you get too into it. But like I said, I mean, my response has been overwhelmingly positive, and I'm pleasantly shocked because I was not expecting it to be that way.
That's good, because what you're doing, it's fun, it's unique, it's different, it's cool to see. And so I would hope that you're getting a good vibe out there.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I try to put out a certain energy of, you know, not thinking too much of myself. You know, it's something I've always tried to approach in my circus show, which is a lot of the time in performances, you need to project a certain confidence on stage so that people, you don't make it awkward for the people in the audience. You know, if you're uncomfortable, a lot of the time people can sense that, and that will make them uncomfortable, and that's never something you want. But I've always tried to sort of toe that line of being confident and yet still very self-deprecating. And I think that energy comes out. I think it came out in, you know, what I did on AGT, of this idea of like, well, you know, we're going to come out, I'm really nervous, I hope it goes well, and I'm going to hope and hopefully try and make these people laugh, because I was really nervous.
Wow. So. Well, it didn't show. And there is that line of being comforting to the audience and not coming out too cocky, right? Where you're like, okay, I need to be confident, and I need to not have that quivery voice unless that's part of my skit. But at the same time, I need to connect with them.
Yeah. And I mean, there are a couple of different ways you can do that. I know I had a conversation with an older Renaissance fair performer. We were talking about different stages. Different stages at fairs will have different size audiences. You know, you might have 20 benches at the stage, whereas this other stage you have 80 benches and you've got a much bigger crowd and the benches are more spread out. And he described it as the equivalent of driving a Corvette versus driving an 18-wheeler. The smaller show is the Corvette, where you can make the sudden turns because the audience is so much closer. They're so much more into what you're doing, and it's easier to make that connection. Whereas those big shows, you can't make quite as many big twists and turns. You kind of have to like ease the audience over this way and ease the audience over that way. Green Day, actually, of all things, the band Green Day had a comment about that, where he's like, you know, when you don't have an intimate venue like that, you have to try and create a spectacle because you can't create intimacy in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to either or. You got to make up for one.
Yeah.
That's a good point. It's a really good visual with the 18-wheeler and the Corvette, too.
It's, I mean, he said it to me in passing at a bar, I think 12 years ago. So that, you know, that shows you how it stuck.
Yeah, those are some of the best things. All right, so Jack, you're here because the world wants to know, what's your awkward you've had to own to live your best life?
I think there are a couple of ways I can approach this. I mean, so the awkward that I had to deal with growing up was that, I mean, like, I was the circus kid because my dad was in the circus. I grew up performing with him, working with him. My mother was a college professor, and I was in normal school the whole way through. And so I think the challenge for me was owning that side of me, which is that, you know, at the end of the day, I spent the first 6 years of my life on a circus lot before I came to the real world. And, you know, I've been in the real world ever since. And I've never been 100% comfortable in, you know, what we would call normal life. Mm-hmm. Circus, you know, you put me on a circus lot and everything makes sense to me. this, yeah, this is how it's supposed to be. This is how it's supposed to work. And I did not have the most pleasant time in middle school and high school, both just because I wasn't quite emotionally, you know, there, in the same level as my peers. And also because, you know, being the circus kid left me open to a lot of unpleasantness. And so what I think as I've gotten older is embracing that, yes, I am different and that's okay. I mean, circus performing has given me a huge opportunity to be creative, to get my name out there, to make some extra money, paid off my student loans. Can't complain about that.
Right.
you know, it's the opportunities I've gotten from having grown up in the circus and, you know, becoming a circus performer so young. I mean, 18 years old, I started performing solo. Has granted me a ton of opportunities that I never would have had. And in hindsight, absolutely worth an unpleasant middle and high school.
It's made up for it.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's always good to say you didn't peak in high school.
You know, right. That's true. That's a good point. I, you know, it's interesting because I don't want to make this a thing, but I've never met anybody who grew up in the circus. That's like, you hear about circus life, but you don't really think that that's something in the modern world where someone actually, especially as young as you, who had that experience. So to me, that's really cool. And I don't know that I would have made that sound cool with my middle school friends that, like, oh, he's the circus kid. But was there a point where you noticed that it switched from this thing that kind of made you different in maybe not what felt like a good way to, hey, this is what differentiates me in a positive light, that I can use it?
Well, so I know I do remember distinctly when I realized it had ceased to be a good thing. Because when you're 7 years old being the circus kid, like all the kids love the circus. That's great.
Right.
But I do remember I was in, I think it was in eighth grade, and someone called me a circus freak. And I was like, ah, there it is. And so that stuck with me for a while. And then I would say it was probably freshman year of college, maybe sophomore year of college, where I wasn't afraid to tell people about it, but I didn't bring it up mostly just because I didn't want to have to explain everything. Cause it was sort of, you know, I'd say, oh, I grew up in the circus. And it's like, okay, you're going to have to answer the same 20 questions over and over again,
right,
you know, with this person that you just met, and they're going to want to know all about your life. And, you know, I'm a pretty private person. I didn't want to do that with every person I met. But I would say it was probably out of college where, you know, it really became pretty stark for me, which was that a job. So I had been freelancing at my radio station, WBUR, for 15, 16 months, working part time. Basically, someone called out sick, they would call me, I would fill in. So I was being paid hourly. I did not have regular hours. And that first year and a half, circus kind of filled in the blanks so I can pay the bills. And it got to the point where when a full-time job opened up, I didn't immediately apply for it. I wasn't sure that I wanted it because I was like, I'm making enough to support myself doing this part-time and working in the circus. And, you know, I was 22 at the time, 23. Right. And it was like, okay, you know, I can support myself doing this, whether or not I have a full-time job. And a lot of my friends who've had to move back home with their parents. And this is also, I should stress, I graduated in 2010. So, you know, not the best economic time to enter the yeah, labor market.
So you were doing all right, even with the challenges.
I was doing okay compared to everyone else I went to college with.
Yeah, that's it's interesting because I think a lot of times what we pursue based on whether or not, you know, it comes down to whether or not we see it as viable based on if the finances work out. And then that reinforces, okay, well, this is working because we're getting paid for it. But there's got to be moments where you go, where you think over the years, as your needs and your life changes, where you think, is that still viable?
Yeah, I had a point. So as I sort of moved up the ladder at BUR, because I've been there now for 12 years, and I've had three or four different, you know, full-time jobs. As I've moved up the ladder there, I've scaled back on circus performing for the most part. There was one year, I think it was the year I became a reporter, so 2014, where I was doing my normal Renaissance Fair load, which is about 13 weekends a year. But then I was also street performing at Faneuil Hall here in Boston, which is, they have a unique situation where they schedule you based on your availability. Mm-hmm. So it got to the point where I realized, because the only time I could work having a 9-to-5 job, you know, 5 days a week, was on the weekends or on nights. And I realized that year I worked, I think it was 24 or 25 weekends. So basically working every other weekend in addition to my 9-to-5. And oh, by the way, I'm taking a ton of vacation time from my 9-to-5, you know, using a bunch of my vacation time just to have a day off here and there. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like, okay, now's the time to start, you know, scaling this back a little bit. But I would say that I'll leave it there.
Right. Sure. Well, that kind of, we always go through those, you know, adjustments to figure out what fits into our life. So when I'm curious, because it sounds like it was after college, by the time you really were embracing it very much, this circus life, but you were performing at 18. So were you performing through high school or developing your routine before you started?
No. Well, so it was sort of a slow process in high school, which was like, I did a knife throwing show when I was 15 or 16 for the high school talent show. Cause I was like, all right, it's knife throwing. It's cool. No one's going to make fun of the guy who can throw knives. That didn't work. But then I was 16, I was working at an ice cream shop making $6.25 an hour. And my dad essentially offered me the equivalent of, I think it was $50 an hour to come work for him for a weekend at a show he had. And I was like, well, duh, yes, yes, at 16 years old, I would like to be making $50 an hour. So I started working with him. And then by the time I got up to Boston for college, when I was 18, it was sort of this idea of like, oh, okay, I can make some money doing this kind of work. And so there was a sort of a mini circus club at Emerson College where I went. And Emerson is like the freaks and geeks, like, you know, like it's all the artistes, you know, go to Emerson College. And I say that in the best of way. Emerson is a fantastic school. And I don't regret going there for one second. And that was part of why I went, because I said, oh, I'm not going to be the weirdest person here.
Sure.
And so there was, you know, a circus club that like kind of got put together very quickly within me arriving. And I met another guy there, and we talked about doing some street shows together. He had done a few street shows, so he kind of showed me the ropes. We put together a show, we did some shows together. And then it kind of just became, all right, I'm just going to go out on my own and I'll give it a shot and we'll see how it goes. And that was kind of how it started.
So do you remember how that felt when you're packing up your stuff and you're going to set up all by yourself that first time?
I don't remember the first time, to be very honest with you, which surprises me. Because I do remember the first time I worked with him, vaguely. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember. I feel like I really never got comfortable street performing. Street performing, it takes such a thick skin to get through, because most of the people who walk by you are just going to keep on walking and they're not going to stop and they don't want to be bothered by you. So you have to learn. I even had this, you know, 2014 when I was working Faneuil Hall, which is a great street performing spot. And when I had, you know, already been performing for years, I was comfortable in myself. I still had to remind myself, like, if people walk by, it's not because they don't like you. It's because they don't like, you know, they don't have time or they don't like Jack the Whipper, who is not you.
Right. True. That's a good way to look at it. I've had some times where, you know, I write a book, I get it out there and it doesn't get a lot of reviews or sales. And I think, well, it's not because people don't like it, because not enough people have read it to not like it. You know, yeah. So it's really hard to separate that space. But I would think if you don't remember that first time, either you were comfortable enough that it wasn't traumatic, or it was traumatic that you blocked it out.
No, I don't remember it being that traumatic or nerve-wracking. It was sort of this, you know, I was never quite comfortable, but I think I always understood, like, I knew I wasn't going out and performing in this large, super impressive venue. I was going out to try and make, you know, a few extra bucks as a, you know, 18-year-old college student. That said, having that other guy there the first few times, I think showed me how easily you could at least get a small crowd. You didn't have to be great, which is not to say, I think this guy is a professional street performer now. So he's an excellent performer, but it was sort of like, everything was easier than I expected it to be working with him. And that made me much more comfortable. I was like, all right, I don't have to come out and do like 15 different awesome tricks that no one else can do. It's like, you can literally just put down a rope and say, hey guys, I'm going to do a show. And some people will stop and watch you.
Yeah. I think that's one of the great lessons to learn, is that you don't have to have everything over the top. It just, you have to start somewhere, just and people will appreciate it.
I'm a big proponent of don't let perfect be the enemy of good. And sometimes good is fine. Sometimes you can get it up to very good. Sometimes right. It's great, but it's not always going to be great. So, you know, do what you can with what you got.
Yeah, I love that. I'm learning to be okay with not being, having everything perfect just to get it going. Makes a difference. So did you, when you were, you know, you went from this place in eighth grade where someone calls you a circus freak, that doesn't feel good. What have you noticed since you've embraced performing and mixing it in with your job? How has that changed your life, you know, preferably for the better? Like, how has it changed it since you've been more comfortable doing it and having it be part of your life where it's not a separate thing?
I think it's a couple of things. I mean, I've alluded to, you know, paying off my student loans and the financial benefits, which have been, you know, just massive. But I mean, that's, you can get that working two jobs, you know, in a lot of different ways. I think on a personal level, it's made me much more comfortable in who I am and embracing that I'm a little different, and that's okay. Doesn't mean I can't have friends. You know, some of my best friends are people who work 9-to-5 jobs, whether they grew up in the circus or not. And I say that because my best friend from the circus now works a 9-to-5 job in an office in the Bay Area. But it's this kind of thing where I've understood, I've come to not understand, but accept that being myself means that, yeah, I have different memories, different experiences than a lot of other people. Doesn't mean that we can't relate and be friends and all that, but it is something about me.
Right. Well, and one thing that I would be curious about is, you know, you have the whip, you have the outfit, you're dressed in character. Is there a moment where you step into that as a character and then come home and put the whip down and be a different person? Or is it kind of always the same guy, maybe with a different accent sometimes?
It's a process to get into that character. So Jacques C. Whipper is kind of me dialed up to 11 with a lot of caffeine.
Okay.
So it's this process of so my big show is King Richard's Fair in Massachusetts. And I live about an hour away from the site, which means, you know, for 14 years that I've been doing that show, it's been an hour drive down in the morning, an hour drive back at night. And so the hour drive down in the morning is my time to listen to a lot of weird music that slowly kind of gets my brain into the right space. Music is a big part of how I will get into character. And it's always different music each year. So like last year, the big three, I would say, were, what were they? It was Bo Burnham's Welcome to the Internet.
Okay.
Because also I was making that into a whip song, which meant I needed to listen to it nonstop.
Right.
Boney M's Rasputin. Uh-huh. And this woman on YouTube's cover of Prince Ali from Aladdin.
Okay.
And you might think that's a weird eclectic mix. And I think the reason I liked all three of them is because all three of them kind of push into the type of character and mindset I'm trying to get into when I'm doing my show, which is Welcome to the Internet is just circus as heck. I heard it and I was like, that is a circus song. And that is why it's going into the secret show immediately. Rasputin, that song just slaps.
Right. Yeah.
And then the last one, Prince Ali, is sort of this kind of like, it's a little pompous. It's a little, you know, chest puffed out, which is, but it's never in a put down way. And I think that's sort of the energy I'm trying to project when I am in character.
Sure.
Again, going back to that line of walking confidence, but without going into cocky. And it's sort of, if I can project that energy without having to say it, you know, and that song will help me get into that mindset. That's what I want to go for. So it's an hour long process sort of to get into character. And then I would say getting out of character is real easy. But I think it still will, I'll be calmer afterwards. I'll be calmer during the week. Sort of it's like my energy has been expended on stage and I don't have the same kind of energy afterwards, or I'll just be even more energized for a while. And it takes, I feel like, a week or two once the season is over to kind of like get back to my normal equilibrium.
Right. And is that, I imagine that's more than just one weekend. Is that a several weekend event?
You'd say 8 weeks. Yeah.
Wow. that's a lot.
Yeah. So that's actually coming up in a week or two, depending on when this airs. So this year I have basically between August 27th and the weekend before Thanksgiving, I think I have 2 weekends where I'm not performing of those, whatever that is, 13 weekends.
So are you love it enough that it doesn't feel like work, or is it like dreading it? How's that feel?
There are days when it feels like work, when it's like 45 degrees and raining, or sure. Equivalently, and I would actually, this is worse, 90 degrees and 98% humidity. I would much rather perform in the cold than perform in the heat. If only because then the mustache starts to run. That's the biggest, because it's makeup. It's all makeup.
It's all about the look, right?
You know, you sweat too much and you know, because I also wear makeup outside just to, you know, smooth over my face. Which is like, it'll sweat into my eyes and my eyes will start burning on stage. And it's like, I can't wipe my face, cause then I'm just going to wipe off the makeup.
Right. It just make it worse. Like, I can't touch anything now. I just got to live through this.
Yeah, exactly. So that's an issue. But no, I mean, for the most part, I find it very energizing. You know, 2020, we didn't have any performances because of COVID. And it wasn't until last year that I realized how much I had missed it. So even though September, October, I'm, you know, basically booked solid and I'm exhausted all the time, it's still a lot of fun. I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't still enjoy it.
I think we've all had that experience where we have a friend or a partner or whoever, and they're griping about whatever's going on in their life. I got to do this and I got to do that. And you're like, then quit, then don't do it. And it's like, well, no, that's not an option. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
That's when you can really see, no, they do love it. They just need to vent a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Assuming it's not, you know, what you need to do to pay the bills, but.
Right. Yeah, that difference. I'm curious, have you had moments where like you had something that you're just like, I'm not going to get through this day, or how am I going to, you know, makeup's running in your face? It just makes me wonder, was there any crazy snafus where you're just thinking, what's next?
No, I mean, because, you know, circus kid growing up, I've seen all the stuff that can go wrong, and I've seen how you can still make it work. You know, my father worked a show where one of the acrobats, there was a technical issue and the acrobat fell and shattered his ankle, and they had to keep doing the show beyond that. And so the only time I've ever cut a show short was when, speaking of broken ankles, I also had a broken ankle. So I broke my ankle, this was 2013, broke my ankle 5 weeks before we started the 8 week run, which meant that for the first 3 weeks, I was still in a cast. And so I found out there, they make a thing called a hands-free crutch. Basically, it's a peg leg.
Okay.
It straps to your leg. You know, you're able to rest your leg and you basically walk around in it. And it is not, as I've been told, I never walked stilts, but it's not unlike walking on stilts.
Okay.
And so I was able to do my show. I was doing my shows for, you know, a few weekends. And then we had weekend where it rained in the morning, and the stage I was on was very old. It, you know, it needed to be cleaned. It needed to be power washed. And because of, like, you know, the moss or the mildew or whatever it was, it's just slippery as all hell. And I was standing there, and the peg leg was just slowly scooting out as I was cracking whips. I wasn't even moving. I could just feel it slowly sliding out. And after the third time I fell on stage, I was like, I got to end this show, guys. I'm sorry. That's all I can do. So I ended it there. But I mean, you know, I'm always of mind of, like, you know, no matter what happens, people are there for you to make them laugh. So
I think that's an important lesson, is that you're there to entertain, and the entertainment doesn't necessarily have to be the exact set that you might have thought.
Yeah.
Planned out. So in the moment, it may have to change.
Yeah. And I'm a big proponent of improv in general. You know, the secret show that I do at the end of the day with Sess and my dad now, actually, is there is a rough outline. I almost said script. There's not a script. There's a rough outline for that show. Basically, like, here's a beat we need to hit at some point. How we get to that beat is completely open-ended. Right. It could happen, like, you know, we might, after a certain point, you know, after a few run-throughs of the show, we might start settling on certain lines of, like, oh, this line got a really good laugh, so let's use that line again. But that's why we rewrite it every, or, you know, make a new one every single year.
Wow.
So it's always, always fresh.
So do you have a favorite memory, favorite event?
I mean, I'd say the first time I set my world record, was a really, really extraordinary experience. Because I did it live, I did it in front of an audience. One of two times I've set a record in front of an audience. And I knew I had gotten it. Like, I knew, so
while you were still in it.
Sort of. It was the kind of thing where I had tried for this record the year before, thought I had gotten it, and I hadn't gotten it. Basically, it's very, very quick explanation. Most bullwhip cracks in 1 minute. And the issue is, you know, you might count that you got 263 cracks, then you watch the tape and it's like, oh, you missed 5 cracks there. Mm-hmm. So you didn't actually break it. And that was the issue I ran into. And so this time I was trying to beat 267 and I counted up to 283. Oh. And I was like, there's no way I lost 15 cracks there. Mm-hmm. I counted up to 289 because I still lost 11 cracks and I ended up with 278.
Okay.
But, you know, by my count, I had beaten it by 22. I was like, oh, there's absolutely no way that I didn't.
Like, at least I'm over it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it was this moment of, like, I knew it, the audience knew it. And it was just this extraordinary feeling of, like, we finally did it. We finally accomplished this thing.
Well, and they're in it with you because they know you're going for it. And to be there in that moment, how cool is that? Just be like, I was there.
Yeah. I mean, it ended up getting broken, I think, 6 months later. And then I broke it again 6 months after that. And then, like, you know, I think it's been broken like 5 times in the last 7 years at this point. But that's a pretty extraordinary experience from my perspective. And we've had some other fun times where, you know, just fun little moments that happen with an audience. I'm trying to remember a funny one where, like, I have a bit where I have a child toss me a stuffed animal. They throw it in the air and I whip it out of the air. And I had a girl, I was performing in the Boston area, and I always will add in a joke like, hey, you know, I need you to throw this gently. You're not trying out for the Red Sox or, you know, the Yankees if I'm in New York, et cetera, et cetera. And I go, you're not trying out for the Red Sox. She goes, I'm not trying out for the Red Sox. Or, I don't like the Red Sox. And the audience starts booing her. And I'm like, this is an 8-year-old child.
Poor kid.
So it's little moments like that that are just real fun.
Yeah. Now, have you noticed a difference in your interactions with people since you have become okay with embracing where you came from and everything? Where does it feel more natural, or people react differently to you?
No, I don't think they react differently to me. I think for all the interest people have when they first find out about my circus background, that interest doesn't really last that long. And after a certain point, it just kind of becomes background noise for a lot of people. Like a lot of the people I work with at BUR, I think for the most part, it's like, oh yeah, that's Jack. He does circus stuff on the side. It, you know, out of context, it all sounds really weird. You know, he's playing with whips on the weekend, but yeah, no, it's just something he's done, and he's done it forever, and it's okay.
Right.
So, you know, that seems to be most of the interactions that I have. The issue is like, anytime I meet someone, people sometimes will want to introduce me like, hey, this is Jack. Jack grew up in the circus. I'm like, why would you do that?
don't lead with the, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, why would you set the tone of the conversation like that? I think that's for the most part, the experience of it. But now I think I'm more comfortable. I think when I was younger, I would probably want to talk about it more because it was a way to set myself apart and make myself appear different. And now I'm kind of like, yeah, I am different. Okay, whatever.
Right.
I don't feel like I need to justify my being different. That's a very winding answer.
That makes sense. I, as you were saying that, I was thinking about how the journey from, as we mature, you know, we go through, you know, when we're in that middle school stage, we want to pick on people's differences, and we see any difference as a weakness because of our own insecurities and our own differences. So anybody else's difference is a problem. Then we get to that stage where maybe we get a little overzealous or proud of our difference because that's what we're going to lead with. And everything is that thing that's different. And then as we get more mature, it's, well, we love that everybody's different in different ways, but it doesn't make me any better necessarily than anybody else. It's just a variety of what people
are. Exactly. Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head, which is, you know, as I'm in my 30s now, I'm in my mid 30s now, where like I'm very comfortable with who I am, and I don't necessarily, I still have a desire to prove myself, but I don't feel an unrelenting need to prove myself and always be the coolest person in the room.
Right. That's a good place to be. Some people take a lot longer to get there.
Unfortunately. It took plenty long. Don't worry.
Yeah. So you got your string affairs coming up. What, anything in particular you want to promote? I know we've got links to your website and everything in the description. So everybody, please go on, follow Jack on the website, on the TikTok, on Facebook, all over the internet. Give him some love. What's the best way for people to support you right now?
So if you want to find my show schedule, it's jackthewhipper.com, just the American version, not Jacques Whippero. Give me a follow on the social medias, and my show schedule coming up, which it's on the website, but August 27th and 28th, I'll be doing 1 weekend at the Maryland Renaissance Festival. Then after that, it's 8 straight weekends of King Richard's Fair in Carver, Massachusetts. We got 2 weeks off after that. And then November 12th through the 20th, I'll be at the Louisiana Renaissance Festival, making my triumphant return after 2 years of a hiatus due to COVID and then a broken thumb last year.
Oh no. Yeah. You got to watch the digits.
Yeah. Yeah. I have promised them I will not be playing baseball the weekend before I fly down.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of one of those things, is you have to protect yourself with the other things you might enjoy based on how they could affect.
That's the other thing. So like, especially, you know, as I get older, the injuries happen much more easily, and they seem to be happening more frequently. And I'm looking at, you know, slow pitch softball, the amateur baseball league I play in. I'm like, not sure how much longer we can do this, at least regularly. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, Jack, before we go, what's that piece of advice you would leave our listeners with on how they could own their awkward?
I would say embrace what makes you different, especially if you're younger. Embrace what makes you different and think about the strengths that it offers you. You know, I think a lot of people think about like, oh, I'm different and I'm worse than everyone else because of this. Think about the ways that you being different or you being weird or you being unusual, think about how it also makes you more capable in ways. So, I mean, like with me, with the circus, moving around basically every other week for the first 6 years of my life, I know that I am an extremely flexible and adaptable person, that just about whatever you throw at me, whatever situation, I know that I will handle it well. I know, especially now having, you know, been with my wife for 6 years, I know that I travel extremely well. I don't miss flights. I'm not late for trains. I am like on time at all times. And she is glaring at me so hard right now. But I'm not the one who once missed their flight because they were just late getting to the airport. So
I hope you guys have an enjoyable evening tonight.
Yes. I'll be sitting on the couch. Thank you.
Just tell her it's just between us and millions of listeners. So
it's all good. It's all good. But it's the kind of thing where like all these things have given me advantages in addition to, you know, like that I can go out and make money this way, but also in terms of how it's helped my, you know, my strengths and weaknesses. And I've tried to pick careers or pick, you know, things that I'll enjoy that lean into those strengths.
Yeah. I really appreciate that you point out not just seeing your differences, but then finding what those strengths are because of that difference.
Yeah. And it, you know, and it goes in a lot of different ways, you know, like performing has made me more coordinated. I am much more coordinated now in my mid 30s than I was at 16 or 17 when I was, you know, actually trying to really play baseball. I'm in better shape now than I was at 22 because I have to stay in shape for the show as the show's grown. It's, you know, all of these, you know, weird things have really, really offered me a lot of advantages. And as far as I'm concerned, very few downsides.
That's excellent. Well, I very much appreciate you taking the time and the effort to open up and share and talk about the awkward stuff that not everybody wants to discuss. It's been great to chat with you and learn more.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, Jack, thank you so much. If you are in the Northeast or Louisiana, be sure you get to one of those shows or buy a plane ticket and fly there to see it because it'd be worth it. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Everybody else, be sure that you tune in, like, share, comment, get this out in front of your friends, give Jack some love on social media, and of course, as always, on your awkward.
Thank you so much for listening in for today's show. Be sure to visit awkwardcareer.com to continue your journey. And of course, please like, subscribe, and share with your friends so they can find their awkward side and learn how to own it.